Welcome, welcome everyone to Animal Voices, and thank you, Alan Jensen. All those animals, they sound so friendly. I hope we treat them well. In this program, Animal Voices, we envision a world where the human race will finally make peace with the animal kingdom. We envision a world where human beings will no longer kill, maim, torture, and exploit fellow beings for food or any other purpose. We recognize that animals have fundamental rights, and that these rights include that they be treated with compassion and mercy, and that they should be accorded many of the rights that human beings expect and take for granted. We know that one day these fundamental animal rights will be internationally recognized. In fact, it's not only an animal right, it's an obligation which we have to animals. Like all of us, animals are capable of suffering, and they are not ours to use for food, clothing, entertainment, experimentation, which we call vivisection, or any other reason. You're listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. Alan Jensen is in the control room. My name is Carl Oskin. And in the studio today, we have John Pranger, Marge Adams, Jenna Hunt, and Ian Dakers. Within a few minutes, we will be contacting Eric Marcus, author, public speaker, and he writes about animal agriculture. At the half-hour mark, Annalisa Zorg from the No Whales in Captivity will give us an update, and Ian Dakers is here to inform us about whaling-related issues. And we will also hear from Dana Lyons. He will be entertaining the crowds at the Earth Save Taste of Health this weekend, October 1st and October 2nd, at the Croatian Cultural Center at Commercial and 16th. Your duty to attend. Check this webpage, www.tasteofhealth.com. Well, we have a whole host of people here in the studio, and we'd just like to introduce them. Yes, Marge, you have a little note.
Yes, I do. According to the Humane Society of the U.S. Factory Farming Campaign Manager, every time we eat a meal, we have a choice. By choosing factory farm chicken, meat, and eggs, we're helping support animal cruelty. But when we choose any of the other alternatives, we're helping reduce animal suffering.
And this program opposes animal experimentation because, in the words of one German surgeon, Werner Hartinger, there are in fact only two categories of doctors and scientists who are not opposed to animal experimentation: those who don't know enough about it and those who make money from it.
And Jenna Hunt, you have a note here? Apparently not. So anyway, well, we have a little bit of music, and we're going to be over to speaking with Eric Marcus very shortly. And what we have is who'll be doing an entertainment at the Taste of Health on this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 1st of October, is Dana Lyons. And we have a tune that he's written. It's called Lay Down Your Whopper, Baby. And over to Alan Jensen.
To the forest with machines with giant teeth to save a nickel on every whopper they make with cheap imported beef. So won't you
lay down your whopper, baby? Lay down your whopper.
Coast of Costa Rica, Amazon and Brazil, they maximize their profits with every culture that they kill.
So won't you lay down your Big Mac, baby? Lay down your Big Mac.
Eat your fries.
Eat those fries.
To save the rainforest, baby,
hey! Before the rainforest dies.
Thank you.
5 billion people. You got 4 billion cows. So move on down the food chain. Eat those grains and tofu now. And won't you lay down your burger, baby? Lay down your burger.
Eat your pie.
To save the whole planet, baby. All set to save the whole planet, mama. All set to save the whole planet, baby. Before the whole planet dies.
Well, that was Dana Lyons singing Lay Down Your Whopper Baby, and to save the rainforests in Costa Rica and everywhere in the world for our health and for the health of the animals. Dana Lyons, you say it so well. We'll be hearing more from you on this program today. Eric Marcus writes and speaks about animal agriculture, and in his latest book, Meat Market, he presents a thorough examination of agriculture's widespread cruelties and its far-reaching social costs. We have reached Eric Marcus. Hello, Eric Marcus.
Hello, Carl. Great to talk to you again. How are you today?
Well, we're just fine, but you have some a new book out and tremendous facts that you've enumerated there. But, you know, what most people maybe are not quite aware of is how this factory farming situation has expanded since certainly 1940 when I was born.
Oh, sure. Well, what's basically happened is that, well, since you were born, Carl, something like 95%+ of the dairy farms, the egg farms, the meat farms in across North America, both in Canada and in the United States, they've all gone out of business. And taking their place has been a different kind of farm, a farm that has raises many, many more animals under much more intensively confined conditions. And so really over the past 50 or 60 years, which is the time frame that Meat Market, my book Meat Market, looks like, you see that animal agriculture has become increasingly cruel and increasingly out of step with how people want animals to be treated.
So just give us an idea of how these numbers have increased.
Well, you know, one of the big figures that I've looked at is that in North America, the number of animals raised for animal agriculture has increased by more than 30%, by about 40% in the last 10 years. And that's principally because we are eating more chicken than ever before, and chicken are such tiny animals that if you switch from beef or pork to chicken, a lot more animals get killed. And, you know, that's been a huge trend to eat more and more chicken in the North American diet. And another reason is that both Canadians and Americans are eating more meat than ever before. Right here where I live in the United States, in 2004, we set a new record last year for the pounds of meat eaten per person. And, you know, there are many, many fundamental and deep differences between the United States and Canada, but one area where, unfortunately, there really are no differences to speak of concerns how Americans and Canadians eat and how our animal products are produced. The factory farming situation in Canada is unfortunately every bit as dire and corrupt and cruel as the system in place in the United States.
So there's a moral problem here. You say it's corrupt and cruel. Maybe you'd like to enlarge on that.
Well, you know, it's one thing to be cruel to animals, and it's another thing to lie about it. And really the big lie of animal producers in North America is that they say they have to treat their animals well, because if you don't treat the animals well, they don't grow properly and they won't perform well. And that simply is so far from the truth. The reality of factory farming is that the idea is not to treat the animals well. The idea is to give them the bare minimum they need in order to survive. And if you look at how pigs and chickens and cattle are being raised on these factory farms. There's just no there's no doubt when you visit these places that these animals are just barely given the bare minimum of what they need to survive. And in fact, you know, if they were given more space and better conditions and better veterinary care, their survivability would increase, the mortality rates of some of these animals would drop, but it's just not worth doing from a financial perspective. You know, a 17-week-old hen costs only about $3 from the hatchery, a hen that can lay eggs for the next year and a half. So, you know, the egg industry, for example, last year spent $0 on individual veterinary care for their hens, because it is never worthwhile to treat an injured or sick chicken, because, you know, the cost of bringing in a veterinarian is at least 10 or 20 times more than the actual worth of the animal. And so what we have is a system throughout North America where these animals are produced as commodities. Every producer is under intense pressure to cut costs at every turn, and as they cut these costs, they inflict huge amounts of suffering on all the animals involved. You know, we're killing throughout North America, we're killing something on the order of 12 billion farmed animals a year. And, you know, fortunately, because of events like this weekend's health in Vancouver, we're finally being put in a position where we can help start informing Canadians about the consequences of their food choices.
So you're speaking out against this cruelty and inhumanity, but it's not only chickens, it's also pigs and cows. They don't fare any better. What about dairy cows?
Oh, well, you know, I've actually been to many factory dairy farms, and I've seen these cows that are literally chained into their stalls, and the only time that they are permitted to walk around is two or three times a day, where they take the five-minute walk to the milking parlor. And apart from that, they are chained into a stall day after day after day. They never get to graze on hillsides or pasture. The food is brought to them, and they're never let out of their stalls. And, you know, this is one area where the situation is arguably even worse in Canada than in the U.S. because of the fact that Canada is significantly colder than most parts of the U.S. It becomes, you know, a cost-effective thing to keep these cattle indoors for basically their entire lives. And if you go and you actually see how these animals are being raised, I tell you, the sadness is just palpable. When you go and you actually look at these cows, you can see how lonely they are. You can see how bored they are. These animals just have a quality of life that is absolutely appalling. And beyond that, you know, a lot of people are under the impression that a dairy cow will just start producing milk upon reaching maturity, and they forget the fact that, like any other mammal, the animal has to be made pregnant first. And, you know, half of the animals they give birth to are, of course, males. And a male born to a dairy cow is not going to have the genetics of a beef animal. So what we get throughout North America and both Canada and the U.S. is that the bulk of these animals are taken to stockyards and sold to the veal companies. So even if you're an ovo-lacto vegetarian, and even if the milk you are drinking is organically produced, in order for that milk to be created, a substantial number of male dairy cows have to be born. And throughout North America, well over 1 million male dairy calves a year are either slaughtered upon being born or sold to the veal companies. And it's the dairy industry that actually drives the veal industry.
So because the industry is so large and it's predicated on corporate profits, they have the people are consuming more, as you've mentioned, probably because the costs have gone down through total factory farming, but also that these gigantic corporations have the wherewithal to do saturation advertising all over the world.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons that consumption of animal products across Canada has been steadily on the increase for the last 50 years is that the prices of these foods have been dropping as a result of these factory farm conditions and the profitability that is enhanced through factory farming. I mean, you have to give credit where credit is due. When factory farming can save a substantial amount of money in producing animal products. And in fact, if you look at Canadian housing prices over the last 50 years, houses have gone up more than tenfold. If you look at Canadian car prices over the last 50 years, the price of a new automobile has also gone up something like tenfold. But if you look at the price of chicken since the 1950s, over the last 50 years, the price of chicken has barely doubled. So what we're seeing is that animal products for 50 years now have not kept pace with inflation. And what we see is that in real inflation-adjusted dollars, the price of animal products has been dropping year by year for about 50 years. And that's no doubt a huge part of the reason why Canadians are making animal products such an enormous part of their diet. It's simply as cheap to eat stuff produced by animals as it is to eat anything else. And then on top of it, you know, all of this cost cutting that's gone on, all of it really comes on the back of farmed animals because of the way that they're driving down the costs is by increasing the levels of confinement, by subjecting these animals to all kinds of mutilations, by deliberately withholding veterinary care because sometimes it's cheaper to just allow an animal to die than to treat the animal long enough so that he can be slaughtered for meat. So it's a whole panorama of cruelties throughout the industry.
What about the is industry also subsidized by government? Is that part of the problem as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the big problems, of course, is the cronyism that occurs throughout the Canadian and American government and the revolving door between industry and agricultural government administration. I mean, in the United States, it's really well known that basically a lot of the senior USDA people are sourced directly from the cattlemen's industry, directly from the poultry industry. This is the government agency that's purportedly providing oversight for animal agriculture is staffed by people who've made a career of working in industry. And we also see it in Canada. You know, the fact is that in Newfoundland, where everybody knows is probably the most colossal mishandling of a major world fishery, what went on in Newfoundland has just been criminal, and the reason that the Canadian government was so irresponsible in handling its fishery and imposing limitations and adequately enforcing what was going on is because really the fishing industry in Canada had just way too much pull, and they kept pushing for to let business continue as usual. And as I'm sure most of your listeners know, in the past 10 years or so, the Newfoundland cod fishery completely collapsed, and there are no signs even 10 years later without any fishing at all in that area, there's no sign that that area will ever recover. And just last year, and again, I'm sure that many of your listeners already know this, but Canada resumed the seal hunt. And once again, this was at the behest of Canadian cod fishermen. So, I mean, we see an industry where, unfortunately, the level of cronyism between industry and government is just staggering. And it happens in the U.S., and it definitely happens in Canada, especially where the fishing industry is concerned.
Yes, and how does the use of antibiotics and pesticides and hormones help promote this factory farming system to the detriment of the health of the animals?
Well, I think one of the things that's going on is that decades ago, animal producers realized that antibiotics could actually be used as a growth promotant. A lot of vegetarian advocates sort of make a mistake when they hear about antibiotics being used. They make the case that through the use of that the conditions in factory farms are so appalling that without the use of antibiotics for chickens and for pigs, the animals would die. What's really going on, though, is that the industry found that when you feed small doses of antibiotics day after day to all of their animals, the antibiotics allow the animal to actually grow faster. So it's a way of jacking up profits because in exchange for a small amount of dollars worth of antibiotics, you're getting a substantial amount of extra meat. So that's one of the things that goes on. And then when you look in the cattle industry, in the beef industry, that's one area where antibiotics are also used, and this time it actually is extensively used to fight potentially fatal health problems that arise from factory farming. What you have in the beef industry is that these animals are really not equipped genetically. Their digestive system has not really evolved to be eating concentrated sources of food. As steers' digestive system is not really equipped to be handling grain, a steer should be eating grass and forage. But in order to fatten these animals up, they feed them grain, which is several times more calorically dense than forage. And so if they eat an equal amount of grain than they would have eaten as forage, the animals start gaining weight at an incredibly rapid clip. Now, the problem with eating that kind of diet is that when cattle eat lots and lots of grain, the grain ferments in their digestive systems. It creates an acidic environment, and all sorts of nasty bacteria and health problems arise. So cattle producers commonly spike their animals' feed at the feedlot with antibiotics to try to keep these infections at lower levels.
We're listening to Eric Marcus. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM. We only have a few more minutes left, Eric, but on a more optimistic note, you've seen maybe the growth of the movements for animal protection, and how is that going?
Oh, well, there's a lot of good things happening. I mean, 10 years ago, people really didn't even know what a vegan was, and they certainly didn't even know how to pronounce the word vegan. Now it's sort of common knowledge. I mean, newspapers like the Globe and Mail and major magazines will use the word vegan in an article and not feel any need to define it. They now assume that their readers know what a vegan is. The number of cookbooks has just gone through the roof, and we've seen both in the U.S. and Canada a number of mainstream, very successful books that promote the vegan lifestyle. I mean, Canada actually has a couple of the most highly regarded dietitians that are specializing in vegetarianism, and there's a wonderful book out called Becoming Vegan by Brenda Davis and Vasanto Molina, Bisanto, I believe, is actually from Vancouver, and that happens to be the best-selling book on nutrition information in both Canada and the United States, and that's something co-authored by people right in your neck of the woods. So, I mean, we're seeing all kinds of wonderful things happening, but on the flip side, the real problem is that day by day, year by year, things have been getting worse for farmed animals, and the number of animals being slaughtered each year in this country has steadily risen. You know, in both Canada and the U.S. over the last 10 years, the percentage of animals sent to slaughter has jumped by something like 30% or 40%. And so one of the things that I've tried to do in my book, Meat Market, is look at, okay, well, what's been going wrong? How has the animal protection movement not been winning ground where farmed animals are concerned, and what can we do differently? So that's something I wrote about in my book, Meat Market, and it's also something I talk about every week on my podcast on vegan.com. I do an internet radio show where I interview many of the best activists in the movement, where I have cooking expos and so forth as part of my radio show. In fact, Zarina Burden, who I believe is coming to the Taste of Health this weekend, who's the author of a sensational book called Viva la Vegan, she has done many, many segments for my radio show, and she's going to be back on. And if your listeners would like to listen to this, they can just head on over to vegan.com and click on a link and listen to a show.
Eric, we're just right out of time, but, you know, I know you're in Oregon, and you're on your way to Vancouver today for the Taste of Health Saturday and Sunday. Vegan.com is where everybody should go, and a wonderful book called Meat Market, and you'll be doing a couple of presentations October 1st, October 2nd. This is this Saturday and Sunday. Have a good trip. We look forward to seeing you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend, Pearl. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
Bye.
You're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFO Radio 102.7 FM, and many of our programs are on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And over to Marge Adams.
Yes, we have Annalise Sorg on the line.
No,
we're going to play a little tune.
Oh.
So... there we're going to have Dana Lyons again, who will be at the Taste of Health, and he is going to sing, I Am an Animal.
And live from beautiful Camp Orcaida on Orcas Island. Dana Lyons and the Endangered Predators. We got any animals out there?
Yeah!
I am an animal.
Yeah! You are an animal.
Yeah!
We both are animals.
Yeah!
We eat like animals.
Yeah!
We dance like animals.
Yeah!
We love like animals.
Yeah!
We all are animals.
Yeah!
We all are animals. The reptiles have some class. They slither about in the grass. They like it when the weather's damp. They party deep in the swamp. They got smooth and shiny scales, long tongues and longer tails. Ooh.
The birds do it all with their beaks. They eat and they clean and they speak. Their wings take them high in the air. And who knows what they do up there? They've got dances that can't be beat. With their feathers and rubber feet. Tweet, tweet. Let's hear some birds out there.
We eat like animals.
Yeah!
We dance like animals.
Yeah!
We love like animals.
Yeah!
We all are animals.
Yeah!
We all are animals.
Yeah!
The insects have some pride. The weather skeletons outside, they can live anywhere, hot or cold, they do not care. With antennas and many eyes, they eat, reproduce, and they die.
The mammals are a wild bunch. They eat each other for lunch. They got fur as soft as silk. They feed their babies milk. They sing all the latest tunes. At night they howl.
Oh, hello, this is Marge Adams. We thought we were going to have Annalise Sorg on the line, but we have someone else taking her place today, whose name is Kelly. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. Hello.
What is your last name?
Kelly Bunting.
Bunting. Oh, thanks so much for taking Annalise's place. I'm pleased that we will get an update on what's going on with the Coalition for No Whales in Captivity. Last week, Annalise told us about the referendum that you had hoped to get on the ballot of the November Vancouver civic election. I understand that that's not going to be a possibility. Will you give us an update on this whole issue, please, Kelly?
Sure. We are still pushing for the referendum. What has changed is we were hopeful that the Cope Park Board commissioners had promised to bring a referendum or ask the Parks Board for a referendum, and they're a majority. So with their support, it would have gotten passed. So they had promised to do that because at a September 10th COPE meeting, the membership actually voted in support of a referendum and asked the commissioners to have a referendum this election. So the Park Board commissioners agreed to do that, but now we believe that they had no intent on doing that. They pretended they were going to do that up until last Sunday's nomination meeting. Even in Loretta Wedcock's nomination speech, she said that she was going to bring this motion forward to the October 3rd meeting asking for a referendum. And then she won her nomination, and within 24 hours she phoned us and said no, she wasn't going to bring this motion forward. So we were very disappointed that died in that position. But we're still putting pressure on. So we are having a meeting October 5th, next Wednesday. We are going to a Parks Board meeting, and we're asking as many people who can to show up in support of having a referendum. And the Parks Board meeting is October 5th at 7 p.m. at the Parks Board office. And we are going to be going in there and asking the Parks Board commissioners to have a referendum.
Kelly, tell us where the Parks Board is located.
It's at 2099 Beach Street, so just at the entry of Stanley Park. If you're coming in down Beach Avenue, it's as you enter the park, it's on your right-hand side. Okay. And it would be great to have a full house. We're going to have about 10 speakers, and then we'd love to have a bunch of people there in support of the referendum. This is the fifth election. We've been trying to get a referendum. And it costs no money to taxpayers. It's just a question written on the ballot. And people on both sides of the debate should be happy to be able to voice their opinion. This is just a question of whether you would support phasing out the whale exhibits at Stanley Park, yes or no. So even if you are for having whales in captivity, you can voice your opinion.
Now, why did Loretta Wedcock tell you that this was not going to happen? They weren't going to approve a referendum.
I believe she never had any intent on doing it. The Parks Board, up until that September 10th meeting when they were directed by the membership to have a referendum, up until then, they had been refusing our request for a referendum. So they had been against it up until then. And then they were, even at that meeting, they voted against it. So the Parks Board commissioners never wanted to have a referendum. It was the membership that told them to. And then they said that they would because the membership told them to, but I believe they never had any intent on it. I think that they just said that they would until they got renominated. Once the nomination was over and they were able to use that to get elected by the membership, then they just let it drop.
There is some argument, I believe, which has been put forward about a lease to the aquarium, Vancouver lease.
That's right, which is not a sound argument. The lease is up in 2015, so some people argue that let's have a referendum in 2011. Well, the aquarium themselves say that they plan for 10 years in advance. So this would give them their direction now. They need the direction now. By 2011, they're going to already have their plans of what they're doing at their facility. So it gives them time to see that the citizens are against whales in captivity, and they can plan with their vision for the next 10 years. Also, if we do nothing now and wait till 2011, for one thing, we have no power to decide to have a referendum in 2011. We've been trying for five elections, so we may not get it then either. But if we wait until then and do nothing, the aquarium can just keep bringing in more whales and dolphins and just have full tanks. So if a phase-out is decided by 2015, it will, you know, even if it was started today, it would take 20 years before the last whale or dolphin was gone from the aquarium. If we wait till 2015 to do anything, it could be another 30, 50 years.
So you accept the suggestion, I guess, that a lease cannot be broken?
No, we have differing legal opinions on that. So the aquarium, or no, the Parks Board has gotten the city lawyers to look at the lease, and they are saying, nope, it can't be broken. We have had two different independent lawyers look at it, and they say, yes, it can. A bylaw supersedes a lease. You can't say, well, you know, if you change a bylaw, you can't say, well, I have a lease. I'm above the law. It's a law. So there's differing opinions. We have asked the Parks Board to get a second opinion because the city staff tend to support the aquarium. And so we'd like them to get an independent legal opinion.
Could you not go above the Parks Board and go directly to the City Council?
Yes, we can. We've spoken to City Council, and they are saying that they would rather the Parks Board pass it first.
But maybe then some pressure needs to be put there.
We're working on that also. But it would be a lot easier if the Parks Board would pass it first.
It seems five times is just about enough. Years of trying. You know?
Exactly. Asking for a democratic process that the people should be able to voice their opinion on such an ethical issue. And people are passionate about this issue on both sides of the debate. Anytime anything happens at the aquarium, it's on the first thing on the evening news, and it's in the paper, and people are interested in the subject. We should be able to have a chance to voice our opinion on whether whales should be kept in bathtubs in the park.
Yes, I'm very much in agree with you.
Thank you.
Agreement with you. Now, Kelly, give us the information again on the meeting, and we'd really like to encourage people to go to it.
That would be terrific, yes. It's October 5th, which is next Wednesday, and it's at 7 p.m. At the Parks Board office, which is at 2099 Beach Avenue. And you can just show up there at 7 p.m., and we would love to see as many people as we can.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Kelly. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You're listening.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was a representative for the Coalition of No Whales in Captivity. Thank you.
Take part in a declaration of global interdependence, the second annual BC Bioneers Conference, October 14th to 16th at BCIT downtown. Each morning you'll hear talks by top social and environmental activists beamed live by satellite from San Rafael, California. And each afternoon you'll take part in hands-on workshops livened with music, dance, and great food. That's the second annual BC Bioneers Conference, October 14th to 16th. For more information, visit www.theteyee.com. CA.
And we're back with Animal Voices 102.7 FM in Vancouver. Ian Dickers is the owner of the website theverysecretplan.com, which is still under construction. And before we get to the dolphin hunt in Taiji, Taiji and Futo, Japan, which we're going to be discussing in a moment, Ian, could you tell us about your plans for this website?
Well, the website, I guess I'm not here really to speak about that.
But you're not, eh?
The main thing is about the creation of the Dolphin Protection Coalition.
Okay, now I see that as one of the pages on that website.
Yes, and what happened was, I mean, this is an indication of the world we're moving into and the power of the Internet. I got an email about a month ago, and it was just forwarded from a friend, and it was about this Taiji Save the Dolphin campaign, and I read the email, and it affected me in such a way that I decided to, with some others, create a Dolphin Protection Coalition and then go online on this sort of communication networking tool called tribe.net, which is a way to get together with people. And within about 7 days, we had over 80 people interested and a working group of 15. And we started putting together, posters and, you know, anything it takes to sort of create a protest, and we pitched in with this global protest that Rick O'Berry, who was the trainer for Flipper, is organizing, and he's one of the few people who goes to Taiji, Japan every year, and he witnesses this slaughter of dolphins. It's one of the last...
And documents it, with photographs and video?
Yes, he has a DVD out right now.
And he and his wife, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Sea Shepherd has gone out there. There's another person, Anthony Marr, who's from
Freaking
Vancouver.
Show here.
Yeah, and he's been down in the United States. He went on tour for 3 months. I just saw him last night, and he showed his PowerPoint presentation. He's going to be a speaker down. What we're doing is there's a global protest on October 8th, on the Saturday, but the embassy's closed then. So from 2 to 6 on Friday, October 7th, we're creating a protest. Mm-hmm. But it's not just a protest. We're trying to do something a little bit different. We're going to reenact the actual slaughter.
Wow.
We've got some sort of paper mache dolphin heads. We're going to see the fishermen. They have a process of going where the dolphins swim, right? And they have a line of ships, about 13 ships, and they bang these metal poles in the water, and they create like a sonic wall, and they force the dolphins into a coastal cove.
This is the entire family of dolphins, or a pod?
Yeah, like a whole pod. Let's say 100 dolphins, and then they put a net across. And then they slowly bring them in, and then it depends on what their purpose is. It's either to weed them out and find the dolphins they want for the dolphin aquariums, or they just are going to kill them. And what they do is, I mean, they kill them in the water, and the cove turns into blood. The whole cove.
Killing's a pretty hard thing to do. How do they kill them?
Well, they take spears, basically, and they spear them in the water, and then the blood drains, and then they drag them onto the boats.
These are mammals we're talking about. They're not fish mammals, right?
Well, I don't know how you can distinguish between different types of animals in one sense, but, I mean, if you look at the size of the brains of whales and dolphins, I think why people are a lot more passionate, perhaps, about these animals than others.
They're extremely highly developed and... highly developed animals and sensitive animals.
Well, they've been around, 400 million years?
Yeah.
I mean, they have a social life, they have a communication system. I mean, we have no idea, really, what goes on inside their minds.
No.
You know, I mean, people talk about their telepathic. You know what's really interesting is they have a swim with dolphin program right beside where they kill the dolphins in the coast.
And this is a therapeutic program for... people suffering from illnesses and so forth. Is that right?
I'm not sure what the purpose is, but I mean, it's just sort of ironic that side by side you're.
It's like in the hospitals where they have a program to bring in pets, and in the basement they torture the animals in experiments. It's the same irony, isn't it?
Well, it's just quite gruesome. I mean, the Japanese embassy is at 1177 Hastings. It's a couple streets over from Burrard, and again, it's at Friday from 2 to 6 p.m. And we've heard a council member might be coming down.
You have speakers?
Tim Lewis, yes. Anthony Marr is going to be a speaker. If we can get power, we're going to show the DVD. We have a bit of musical entertainment. It's something that I think is an indication of the distinction between paradigms, we really have to start taking a stand. And I mean, most Canadians don't really like to protest. We don't like to get onto the streets, but This is every Japanese embassy. If there is a protest, they have to report it back in Japan. It's another area where pressure is placed. It will change because people hide behind a banner of tradition, but there's a lot of traditions on the planet which, you know, if you look at, aren't necessarily that good for sort of life on Earth.
And they don't need to remain traditions.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's our own group has gone through a lot of discussions around the cultural impact. And, I mean, nobody wants to sort of go to another culture and say, you're doing something wrong, we want you to stop it if it's their lifestyle. But these they're very rich. I mean, they are making a lot of money. And what's a little crazy is the dolphin aquariums who hide behind this, we love dolphins and we're doing it to protect the dolphins. They're there hand in hand with the whalers, choosing them, and you watch them in this DVD and you see no compassion. You see no, there are dolphins dying in these nets, they are drowning, and mothers are being taken from their babies, and you can hear the cries, and it's just like a day in the park. And, you know, if that's what's happening, if that's the type of attitude that the people have who are in these aquariums, I mean, if human beings really, really say that we have a freedom of right, we have a right to our own freedom, at what point do when we impose it on other beings? And I mean, let's say, just to, I don't want to draw a line in the sand or in the water, but let's say a dolphin and a whale are sentient, they're self-conscious, they are, let's say, equal to us. You know, you have to look at us as a society, us as a species, and question what we are doing. I mean, and looking at, you know, with whales in captivity, I mean, what human being would want to be, you know, in this room right now for the rest of our lives with a whole bunch of dolphins outside, you know, throwing food to us to make us jump up and down? You know, there isn't a human being who wouldn't go crazy. Why do we think it's any different with a mammal that has a bigger brain than we do? You know, and you know what's interesting is the human beings who swim with the dolphins don't even attack them. They still have so much love. They still have understanding. It's almost like playing with children, knowing that, you know, well, these guys aren't that bright, so I'm not going to hurt them.
And dolphins have saved the lives of innumerable human beings on ships and shipwrecks and various places on Earth. Okay. Shark attacks, yeah.
So can I make one last? It's at 1177 Hastings in front of the Japanese embassy. It's at from 2 to 6 p.m. on the Friday, and then October 8th it's at 12 to 2 because we changed it to Friday because it's closed. Nobody's going to really, you know, there might not be there, but we're going to be there on both days. And so if you can't come on Friday, come on Saturday. If you can't come on Saturday, come on Friday. And on Saturday it's at 12 o'clock till 2 o'clock.
We need to do this because the fishermen themselves are afraid of this pressure, aren't they, from their own governments?
Well, the Japanese people don't even know about it for the most part. Mm-hmm. So the pressure needs to come from here, from everywhere, to let the Japanese people know it's occurring, and then the Japanese government will shut them down because they are licensed. They're licensed to go do this. Sure. And they put up blue tarps. I mean, if this is tradition, why do they hide it so much? You know, any Westerner is not welcome in that town. They do not want the world to know, because if the world even saw for a second what was going on, I mean, it would be shut down.
This has about a 400-year history, hasn't it?
Yes, but I don't think dolphin aquariums have been around for 400 years.
Does this mean that the animals are simply served up as meat?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, they're canned. Some of them are grinded up as fertilizer. People are eating them.
Food.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a crying shame.
Well, it's. I think if in your heart, if you love dolphins, if you've ever seen dolphins, if you really believe they're like human beings in the ocean, then you got to come down to the embassy and show what you believe in.
So that's 1177
West Hastings.
West Hastings. Thanks very much, Ian.
You're listening to Animal Voices and Alan Jensen in the control room, and we've had quite the issues here about animals and factory farming and whaling, and Kelly Bunting was on the program. She's a wonderful activist. And what is so significant is that for every living being, its life is its most important thing, and we should recognize that. And over to Alan Jensen, and he's got some music for us. Yes, you've been listening to the Vancouver Chinese Music Ensemble, so some local music. Well, the animal transportation and the factory farming, as we heard earlier from Eric Marcus, it's a gigantic industry. It's cruel, it's ruthless, it's predicated for profits. And one of the aspects that Canadians for the Ethical Treatment of Food Animals specializes in is to make people aware of the horrors of transportation of these animals. They cover haul these animals over gigantic distances. Long-haul transportation is common and poses significant risk to animals due to the water and food deprivation, the exhaustion of traveling in hot areas or maybe cold areas in northern Canada, the jostling and the stops, and piling over each other, overheating, and the importing and exporting of animals for food is indeed a global business. Food animals are transported by motor vehicle, sea vessel, railway, and aircraft. For example, Canadian cattle are shipped to Mexico by truck. Imagine the distance. Canadian pigs are transported by ship to Hawaii. And within all that, we have these downer cows, which is a term the industry uses to describe an animal too sick or injured to walk or stand. And that happens so much during these gigantic distances that they have to travel. So we have from the authority, from Canadian sources, that 2.3 million animals died in transportation in Canada last year. It's a horrible track record. It's all part of this producing food for the least cost. And maybe with this crisis that's happening with the gas, the price of gasoline, maybe there will be a revision of these cruel practices. So, we have 5 or 6 minutes left over. Jenna, you have something here? Here we go.
Well, there's a wonderful review in the Georgia Strait about a new movie by Werner Herzog called Grizzly Man. And it's the story of a man called Timothy Treadwell who chose rather dubiously to commune with and to protect the grizzly bears, which he claimed to love, of Alaska's Katmai National Park. But sadly enough, his affair ended one autumn day in 2003 when Treadwell and his girlfriend Amy were mauled and eaten by a ravenous 450-kilogram brown bear, Grizzly Adams, at Ain't. But this show says that the naive and delusional grandeur of this and other sermons paints an unsentimental yet emotionally moving portrait of a troubled soul who crossed the line with nature and paid the price. Herzog exhumes both the beauty and the arrogance of what became a suicide mission for Treadwell. And it becomes clear that Amy did not choose nor expect to die this way. Treadwell's fascinating solo footage is also the video diary of a failed former actor and recovering alcoholic peeling away various layers of doubt and questioning the nature of God and at times his own sexuality. But in the end, Grizzly Man is a cautionary tale about nature and the conceit of man. So it shows you how man presumes to love nature, but in the end, it's all for his own well-being, not for the nature. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenna. And that's from the Georgia Strait. And over to Marge. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left.
It may not be time for my entire story, but this is a short story of sensitivity of a chicken. And I think it gives us pause to see the non-speciesism with this particular group of animals. As almost any working mom knows, it can be difficult to find decent daycare. Where do you go? Whom can you trust? And what if you're a single mother and have 4 newborns who simply cannot afford to stay home? Leanne Myers knows what a predicament this can be. But she has also seen an incredible way in which this problem was solved. Leanne does not have any little ones of her own, but every day she nurtures the offspring of other creatures. And those creatures are 120 chickens, 9 rabbits, 4 sheep, a steer, and a turkey. With that many personalities milling around, she rarely knows what to expect. Sure enough, one day, among all the creatures surrounding her, an amazing thing happened. On a warm afternoon in April of 1998, Leanne headed across her 3-acre Missouri farm to the hen house to do her daily chores. As she reached into one of the nesting boxes, she was startled to feel a texture that was anything but egg-like. It was soft, warm, and furry, Leanne scooped up a tiny creature into her palm and eased it gently from beneath the brood hen. It was a newborn kitten, she recalls with her voice still filled with awe. It was so young that its eyes hadn't even opened. Leanne moved the hen and discovered three more kittens softly purring in the cozy straw nest. She replaced the kitten she was holding. Almost immediately, the hen fluttered back into the nesting box and used her beak to nudge the kitten protectively beneath her wings. Soon the kittens were kneading her breast with their paws, looking for food. Unfortunately, given the constraints of Mother Nature, she had nothing to feed them with. Leanne suspected that the kittens had been abandoned by their mother. She remembered a pregnant tortoiseshell cat that had been hanging around the barn, and she feared that she would have to bottle feed them in order to keep them alive. Her worries never came to pass. The next morning, when she returned to the hen house, the kittens still curled in the nesting box with the hen and their bellies mysteriously plump full of milk. The puzzle was soon solved. Over the next several days, Leanne caught occasional glimpses of the mother cat scampering in and out of the hen house. Then, one afternoon, as she entered the hen house, she encountered a sight that brought a tear to her eye. The mother cat was lying on her side in the nesting box. As Leanne approached, she could clearly hear the tiny sucking sounds of nursing kittens. And the whole time, the hen just sat there, cooing contentedly, she says. Isn't that a marvelous picture? I think we're going to have to cut it off there.
Thank you, Marge. And you've been listening to Animal Voices. And in this program, Animal Voices, we envision a world where the human race will finally make peace with the animal kingdom. We envision a world where human beings will no longer kill, maim, torture, and exploit fellow beings for food or any other purpose. Thank you, Alan, for being in the control room, and we'll be back on next week with another program. Thank you for listening.